is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Johannesburg, Reuters. Leaders of the BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, converged on Johannesburg for a summit where they will weigh expanding the bloc as some members push to forge it into a counterweight to the West. More than that, a G7-like organization that matches the G7 of the North. I welcome Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, to observe what appears to be a concerted effort by two major adversaries of the United States, Russia and China, joining into conversation with an ally of the United States, India, an unknown when it comes to Brazil, given Lula da Silva's unpredictable future. However, what we're looking at is the formation of what appears to be an organization that has ambition. Mary, a very good evening to you. The BRICS existed, in your observation, traveling with the Secretary of State. Is it ready to become a G7-like organization, a transnational trade conversation that also makes important foreign policy decisions? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, I think it's important to go back to the origin of this so-called BRICS grouping. It was simply made up by a Goldman Sachs economist named Jim O'Neill in 2001. And it was always a strange creature because two of the countries, Brazil and India, are democracies, although, as you say, one is more Western-facing than the other. And the other two are a combination of a totalitarian state and an authoritarian criminal gang. So these nations don't share the same values or systems of governance that the G7 nations share. So it's always a little strange when they get together and talk about ways in which they want to cooperate. Now, that being said, I don't think we should dismiss or underestimate the import of this meeting in Johannesburg, because Xi Jinping, for many years now, has been trying to build a different trading bloc to disentangle himself from the U.S.-dominated, dollar-dominated trading system. And that's a very hard thing to do, because the United States possesses the world's reserve currency. It's the most, it's the deepest, most liquid capital market. Most commodities are priced in dollars. And it gives us an enormous amount of power when we want to sanction a nation. It really hurts. If you look at the Iran maximum pressure campaign or the Trump years, you can see that. And so what is Xi trying to do through this awkward BRICS mechanism plus his Belt and Road initiative? He's saying, look, there are certain things that we want to trade with one another. China can produce not just cheap goods like clothing or low-end manufactured goods, but hey, now we can produce cars and electric vehicles. And you, the South Africans of the world, have a actually declining economy, very ever poor population because of your misgovernance. Of course, he's not going to say that. And you need this cheap stuff. Oh, and by the way, a China and a South Africa share mutual interests because we're both revolutionary regimes at our core. So, hey, you know, let's get together and help one another. So I would pay close attention to what comes out of this meeting, not just the rhetoric, but any agreements that are signed. I don't think it's going to upend the dominance of the U.S. dollar, but it's certainly something that the folks at the State Department and in the White House need to be paying attention to and strategizing about how we're going to strengthen the U.S.-led system. And I'm afraid that that's in all likelihood probably not happening.
One organizational scheme that I've seen advanced from voices favorable to BRICS is that this is the Global South. Technically, that isn't completely accurate. However, Russia being well north of the equator and China as well. However, the Global South is knocking at the door, according to reporting. This is Reuters listing a sum of the 40 countries looking to apply to membership in BRICS. And it's a striking list. From the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Iran, and Egypt. from Africa, striking to me is the Democratic Republic of Congo, along with Egypt, yes, of course, and Gabon. And from South America, from the Americas, Argentina and Bolivia, along with Cuba. I especially emphasize Argentina because the news of the hour is that Lula da Silva, the president of Brazil, endorses Argentina as a member of BRICS. Argentina is in the midst of a political campaign, choosing the next president in the fall of this year. And it could go towards the Peronistas, it could go towards libertarians, it could go to none of the above. But Lula da Silva wants it in. So, Mary, listening, and I mentioned also Ethiopia and Africa, these countries, they're looking to join with Russia and China. Does that not have unhappy connotation for their future dealing with the U.S.?
Well, the irony of many African nations is that they view China as a liberator because China, under Mao, supported many of these radical political parties when they were suffering under the yoke of colonialism. And what they don't recognize is that they are facing, in fact, a new colonization by China as Chinese state-owned companies move in and extract their resources with Chinese workers and build shoddy infrastructure under rapacious terms of loans. The reason that Lula wants Argentina to join now is because he's afraid that Argentina is about to turn to the political right under the libertarian candidate Javier Milei, who looks in a very strong position to win in Argentina's election in late October. So he wants to get Argentina into the fold before that happened. You know, again, you have to ask, what is Washington doing to demonstrate benefits, economic benefits to nations in sub-Saharan Africa or elsewhere on the continent that want to trade with us? We've really never made a serious effort to do that. Under the Trump years, there was something called a Prosper Africa plan that had a good outline, but it was never really focused on by the White House or really followed up on. And so when you see aspirants to the BRICS include nations like, say, Nigeria, UAE, Saudi Arabia, it's because they see it in their benefit to do so. It's just a raw interests calculation. And we can't sit on our heels and say, you know what, our system is better, which it is. We need to demonstrate to these countries that we want to have them in our grouping, and we need to come up with ideas to tie them to us. And doing that through trade is a very good, mutually beneficial way to do it. And that's what China is trying to do here with the BRICS. And it's what we should be doing, because our system of government and our capitalist system will provide far more benefits to those people than China's totalitarian model.
From the outside, this doesn't look like the Cold War, when we had the First World, the Second World, the non-aligned world. This looks like no simple organizational recommendation will do. Kazakhstan, for example, vast resources, very few people, and somewhat at odds with Moscow. A number of the young people from Moscow have fled to Kazakhstan to avoid the draft. Or I'm struck again and again by, you mentioned Africa, and South America, but Indonesia wants in, Mary. That would be right. A major plum for any organization. I was not aware that Indonesia was in play.
Yeah, but when was the last time the United States had a serious Southeast Asian strategy? I mean, come on, it's been decades. Maybe since, you know, Paul Wolfowitz was ambassador to Indonesia in the 80s. I mean, you got to go back a long way. The unfortunate truth, and we've discussed it on your show before, John, is that these strategically important regions, whether it's Southeast Asia or sub-Saharan Africa, or really the whole of Latin America, are seen as backwaters and not prestigious postings at the State Department. And so you don't get the really forward-thinking strategists, few that they are at Foggy Bottom, focusing on these regions. You need leadership from the White House. You need or a Secretary of State that isn't just a functionary reading scripts, but somebody who is really looking at the world and saying, okay, where are the places that we know the United States has significant national interests, and how do we tie those nations to us, whether it's a geographically important nation like South Africa, or a place that, as you say, has significant natural resources like UAE, or a place that has both, like Kazakhstan, which borders not just Russia, but Xinjiang in China. This is the kind of forward-thinking strategy that just really doesn't exist in Washington today. And so we find ourselves reacting to summits like this BRICS summit in Johannesburg, rather than guiding the conversation and putting barriers in between nations like Russia and China, which is really, just as important as an offensive strategy, is trying to figure out, okay, how do we get our adversaries to spend their time and resources on wasteful things, so they have fewer resources to spend on threatening us? That's the kind of thinking that we need and that we just don't have today.
A cynical interpretation is that all these countries are aware of the superior surveillance state constructed by the People's Republic of China and welcome it to their governance as well. I'm looking at Algeria, for example. The control of the population can be done digitally and with surveillance cameras. They can't be unaware of that, Mary, that they're inviting in a state security apparatus that doesn't obey sovereignty or borders, that will take over the governance of the country and favor a strong man over and against democracy. They have to know this.
They do, but it's also important to note that China's quote-unquote safe cities technology, which is what you're referencing, has also been purchased by democratic allies of the United States in South America. So it is pervasive, and it's very attractive to national leaders because they can go to their public, whether it's in a democracy or an authoritarian regime, and say, I'm keeping you safe. If somebody steals a car, we're going to know exactly who it is, and I'm going to send my state security to go grab the guy. So you should support me. That is unquestionably part of the equation. But I think just as importantly, John, you have weapons trading that's also going on. Recall that the U.S. ambassador to South Africa, one of the few, I would say, diplomats today who actually has done something positive for U.S. national security, he came out and called out South Africa for allowing a Russian ship to unload cargo, which looked like weapons, and effectively said South Africa was aiding Russia in its fight against Ukraine. That created a huge stir in South Africa. It was very embarrassing for the government there. It was a terrific move, I thought, by the ambassador. We need to be doing more of that. But just as importantly, we need to be explaining the strength and the benefits of aligning with the United States. Look, South Africans themselves are aware of how horribly mismanaged they are. I mean, the electric company hasn't met consumer demand since 2008. They have rolling blackouts. They rank below Equatorial Guinea and just above Libya in terms of per capita GDP. It's a complete and utter mess. And the ANC is losing popularity. It's a great time for the United States to come in and say, hey, well, let's do a deal here that would aid ordinary South Africans. Stop just talking about the government leadership. Start talking to the ordinary citizens about what they want, because the polls show that they don't like what's going on. And they would probably rather ally with a friendly Western democracy than with a totalitarian state like China. But again, that requires some leadership and some forward-thinking strategy from Washington. And that is something that I just don't think that we've had in quite some time.
Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former Senior Advisor to the Secretary of State. F-16s at last when we come back. I'm John Batchelor.